enjoy a good squeeze.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Margot.
And I'm August.
And this is A Good Squeeze.
The show where we squeeze a little bit of that James Bond into our everyday lives.
That's right. And guess what?
What? Just like, what am I guessing?
It's like every episode, we're doing things a little different today.
Oh boy, howdy.
We are exploring, we're exploring the world of James Bond from a different perspective. A very interesting perspective. One might say a common perspective.
Ooh, a common one.
Well, it's not. It's less than common. Because today we have Ben of The Common Gamer.
That's right. Ben is...
Hi, Ben.
Hello.
Yeah.
Well, there he is.
I'm Ben.
I say he's... I touted him as a video game history teacher by day, a common gamer by night. And this may be a surprise to some listeners out there, but he's also the brother of the nostalgic here on A Good Squeeze.
That's right. And the brother-in-law of the novice.
What? Who'd have thunk?
Yeah. Some people might have taken him in a while.
That's some Steiner math there.
Some Steiner math. I have to give a little bit of a disclaimer at the beginning because, you know, this is something within your guys' realm now, but, you know, everyone knows you as August, and I've never in my life called you August. It was like one time you called me Benny and we're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like that's how it feels like if I think of that. So I will be calling you Gus. I apologize.
So there is a distinct point in time. Anyone pre-Margot is knows him as Gus. And everyone post-Margot who's new to his life post-Margot is August.
There are times, Margot, where you will say like, oh, I was just talking with August. I'm like, who are you talking about?
You'll say Gus, and it feels like I'm hearing like he's the evil twin who lives in the walls. I'm like, oh, I don't know him. Which one is that? Haven't met him yet. And then I have to code switch with you guys.
I was going to say, there's times where Margot code switches based on who she's around because she's trying to be polite. And if it's a Gus crowd, she'll say Gus, but whenever she says it, it just sounds greasy.
It's gross. I mean, it's not gross. It's your name, and it's beautiful, and it's lovely, and it's very. There's a romance around it because it's an endearing nickname that your family gave you. But I didn't know you as Gus, so I'll say like, oh yeah, I was talking to Gus. It just like grease falls out of my mouth. I'm like, well, there it is. And people just notice. Gus. They're like, I'm like, yeah, I know. Sorry,
so that's a fair disclaimer just in case randomly it goes from August to Gus to whoever else knows.
Who are you people?
But yeah, Ben here, he's got a budding platform, a budding channel where he discusses video games, retro and modern, memories, facts, and everything in between. So Ben, why don't you...
I'm gonna interrupt as I do.
Do it.
You said budding. I would say blowing up.
Man. Budding, blowing.
You two are both very modest, very humble people. Blowing up is the word I would use.
Okay.
Yeah. So why don't you take the floor, Ben, and I'll be quiet for a bit.
No, she wants to interrupt. Yeah.
No, I guess you guys asked me to explain who I am, and other than just the brother of the nostalgic, more or less, I've always loved video games. As Gus's whole thing throughout life has always been movies, especially James Bond. I've always just leaned more towards games being my kind of passion hobby thing. It's always been what I gravitated towards, even at one point wanting to be a developer. Like I wanted to go into video game design development. I remember when Gus, you were getting ready to go off to college. I remember you were touring the one school, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but I remember you looked into like the video. You had seen some of the video game stuff at that school, and you told me like it's a lot of math, like it's a lot of like code and different things, like it's a lot of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. But the other thing I always wanted to be was to teach and to be a teacher, and that's ultimately what I went into. And so slowly over the years, I've been integrating more and more into that, into, you know, my life at school or my life in outside of school with other programs and different things like that, running clubs, video game history clubs, video game design clubs, where I just teach about the history of games, Whereas like last year I did a class on just overall video game history. This year it was on video game franchises, much like we're going to be talking in here with the franchise, James Bond franchise. And it's just slowly kind of been able to integrate it into my actual life. Take like my, the thing that I really do love, which is video games and gaming, and merge it into teaching and in what I like about teaching, which is history. And so the channel kind of came about from this kind of idea of I watch a lot of things on games and see a lot of things. I enjoy history. I love video game collecting, as do you. And I noticed that a lot of the video game space is really negative. And people are just grumpy all the time, where I'm like, it sounds good to me, new game. And everyone's like, this stinks. So I kind of wanted to be a positive person on the internet, which is very hard. But also just put out some of the content that I want to see. I'm very much like a pusher. I try to get people to play different games, play things that I enjoyed, and try and get them to go outside their comfort comfort.
I have experienced it firsthand.
And I've witnessed
exactly.
It.
Yeah. I mean, I literally, Margo, speak out of turn.
Sorry.
What?
That was a Jimmy Stewart ism.
No, I feel like I need to say you need to pull up a Brandy Martini.
A Brandy Martini?
Do Brandy you Martini. Do a Jimmy Stewart?
A view to pull up some view to some cushion.
View to some cushion. That's good, Midge.
Yeah. Yeah. You want the Moonraker? I'll tie a lasso around it.
Nice.
I had these written down. They're right here. I wrote them down while I was teaching the other day. I'm sorry. Margo, not to speak out. You don't like video games very well, or they're not your thing. Not that you don't like them.
You're correct. I don't like playing them. I like watching them, but I don't like, I mean, I have, as the listeners know, and as you know, and as everyone knows, but I like to repeat myself, I have four older sisters, so I didn't get a turn. That's really what it was. And I learned how to watch. So that was, you know, I enjoy it, but no, I understand what you mean. Yeah.
But like my favorite video game of all time is Persona, the Persona 5 and the Persona series. And when Goss and Margo started dating, I think it was the first Christmas I just bought you because you were into manga. I'm like, here's Persona 5, the manga. You will read this. Goss is playing it. And then I bought you it for a couple years.
You bought me five total, which I read. Yeah. I read all of them. I did. And they're up there. They're on my shelf.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah. But yeah, so I am a pusher of things. And so I thought maybe I could use this a bit of a platform to just do the things that I like and showcase different things and opinions that I have, but do it in a positive spin, but also be able to just say, like, these are some cool games that you should look at or appreciate or look back at and maybe underappreciated or lesser served. I don't know. You know,
I've enjoyed seeing your content, and it's really you just sharing the stuff you love, right? And it's not necessarily you're sharing like the latest hottest video game. Like at the time of this recording, you've done stuff on Trauma Center, which is a very obscure game.
Very obscure.
Area 51. You know, it's a very obscure game. Mm-hmm. Things like that. But then you also touch on video, like things like the designs of the DS, the different designs of the DS and why the originals, you know, quote unquote, better. But more or less, that's just your opinion, man.
Yeah.
Right?
And no, quite literally. Yeah. No one agreed with me. No one agreed with me on that one. Everyone's like, the hinges break. I'm like, well, mine didn't.
Yeah. You got the bad one. I got the good one. Like,
yeah. I've enjoyed seeing you express yourself in that way because, you know, you and I talk almost every day on the phone, and it's definitely like a beast inside. You need to like let out talking about these video game things.
I'll explode. I think I usually tell you that. I'll be like, I know you don't care about this, but I gotta say it or I'll explode.
Like I got like, stuff in the basement, you know.
Yeah.
What basement? Like
I got caught up on a game series that I've been playing since 2001, but there's 13 games in the series and I just finished playing them all. And I was like, I got to tell you about this game that I finally got caught up. It's like 13 games, 600 plus hours. And Gus was like, I, just so you know, I'm about to pick Margo up. I got like a minute. I'm like, okay, well, real quick. Real
quick. And you still keep going even when I'm in the car. Here's the thing. Hey. Like, it doesn't matter.
I feel like we should be recording this in the car.
Yeah, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good content.
But, you know, you called it pushing. I wouldn't necessarily call it that because there is, like, you're very educated on the matter and you tailor your suggestions per, like, on the individual. You do, you both of you two, both of you two, both of you.
Both of yens.
And that.
You guys like to tailor experiences. You, Gus, August, sorry. It's like, it's an instinct. It does. It's going to be tough. So it's going to be a rough one, fellas.
Wait until I say August.
Oh, Lord. But so August likes to tailor like the immersive experience with a movie, and you like to tailor that experience with gaming. And I feel like being so educated on the matter and having that understanding of the history and the present and, you know, how you're able to like relate that to an individual, I think that's incredibly important. You don't just push things on people. You make sure you give them things that you're like, I think you'll like this. If you don't, that's your opinion, but that's that. And thus, you know, I feel like this platform that you've created does promote a lot of positivity, which is something that we're very lucky in the James Bond community to have. Unfortunately, that is not the case for the gaming community. But you are creating that positive influence. Then the change needs to, it starts with one person. And with that too, like, I mean, you're doing all this research, you're doing all this understanding to the point where you're able to like educate us on, you know, the history of James Bond video games, which I didn't even think was a thing. I was like, oh, yeah, there's two of them. Like, yeah, there's the one that's going to come out and the one that did come out. And that's
it. A hefty subject for sure. And, you know, with that being said, with 007 First Light, the release is nigh. You know, it's coming out very, very soon at the time of this recording. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with this new Bond video game coming out, this new adventure to be had, there's a lot of anticipation around it. And the James Bond video game, you know, franchise has had quite the history. Mm-hmm. And it's had highs and lows for sure, but it's been dormant for what, 12, 14 years?
14 years, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of excitement about a new Bond video game. But with me knowing that my brother is a video game enthusiast, a history enthusiast, a video game history enthusiast, and not
your
only
brother.
And my brother, not only does he teach this stuff, he now has a YouTube channel and an Instagram where he shares this stuff to all of us. So I thought it'd be great to bring Ben on here to a good squeeze to talk some James Bond stuff and talk James Bond in video games. So with that, Ben, take it away. Give us the history of James Bond in video games.
We'll try.
I do have questions for you. So you take the floor and then I'll ask them.
I told Gus today, I was like, you might ask me something, be like, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that. Because honestly, a lot of times with any of my classes, anything like that I've taught, it's not like I went to college for this, right? Like I didn't go to college to learn about the history of video games per se. A lot of it has been on my own time. So a lot of times with different games and things that I'm looking into, I'll just research into it and watch videos and different things on that to figure out what it is. And from that, then I'll start to learn like a lot of different history and a lot of different things. And what's interesting is I thought pretty similarly to you, Margo, in that, I didn't necessarily think there would be that much, like it would go that far. Cause obviously for many people, when you think of James Bond games, you just think GoldenEye. And then for especially Gus and I, it goes to like Agent Underfire and Nightfire and Everything or Nothing. And then for me, it kind of stopped because that was kind of where the games tailored off a bit. And there's a reason for that. And we'll talk about that. But I didn't think there was much before that, before GoldenEye, because that was really the breakout success. But with James Bond being this, you know, movie industry titan, it's kind of interesting to see that in video games, it's kind of mirrored the industry and of video games in every way, shape, or form. It's shown the transitions throughout the video game boom through the crash and then some afterward, because a lot of the things that it did early on are parts of the reasons why the video game industry crashed. I mean, the first Bond video game came out in 1982. Technically, on a technicality, the Bond games and the Bond franchise of video games is earlier than Mario, which oftentimes people think video games and think Mario. But Mario, the arcade machine, came out in 1983. First Bond game, 1982. Technically, Donkey Kong came out before that, and there was Mario, but he's Jumpman, not Mario. So it's, you know, it's technicality. And it's also a technicality in that it's not really a James Bond game. It was a game called...
What does that mean?
Yeah, it was a game.
Prove.
Well, so it was a game called Shaken It, Not Stirred, which is an awesome title for a James
Shaken
Bond game.
Shaken It, Not Stirred?
Shaken, Not Stirred.
Oh, I thought he said Shaken It, Not Stirred.
Shaken It, Not Stirred.
It's a dance video.
And that'd be awesome. 1982, it's like a DDR style Bond game. Make that. I actually, before, when we were on the phone earlier, I was like, I might ask you, like, what kind of Bond game would you want? And I did not think of a Bond dancing game, but that might
trademark
be good.
Right now, dibs.
You danced all the theme songs.
Yeah. You recreate the opening title sequences. So you have to dance like the ladies. Yeah.
There you go.
No exceptions.
That's good. How about a cocktail mixing game on the Wii? Right, for James Bond. That could be Shaken It, Not Stirred.
It's like there's a game called Coffee Talk where you have to like serve coffee to people and hear their thoughts or like and help them through their problems. It'd be like that, but you're shaking up cocktails and talking to spies.
Oh, talking to people at the bar.
Yeah, basically at casinos. Yeah. It was not licensed. It was an unlicensed game. There was this guy. He was literally just an accountant. That was just his job. It was actually his wife. Went to I believe it was just like a client's event or something, and saw a text-based computer game. Which is just like a choose your own adventure, you know, it tells you what to do. You type in, you know, go left, go right, et cetera. Some of the earliest games were just those. Richard Shepard was his name. He just developed a game for the ZX Spectrum, which was just like a computer at the time. Really one of the first, like next to the Atari 2600, really a kind of in England. It was big in England. Was kind of this turning point, but he created the game and it was completely unlicensed. He couldn't secure the license in any way, shape or form. Again, he was just an accountant by day. But it was an interesting game. It was incredibly difficult and more so unfair than anything. They really only used, it was like 007 in name only, more or less. Like they had some aspects that were like, they said 007, they said Bond in it, but like Miss Moneypenny was Miss Cash Coin instead. Things like that to avoid any copyright. And then like that game went away because when Parker Brothers, so you know more for like board games and stuff, they got the rights to, they got the actual license to make games. When they did that, they actually took the game off shelves or, you know, away, and they just reissued it as a game called Super Spy. So it's the same thing more or less, but it's just not, you know, called 007, Shaken Not Stirred anymore. So the first game technically wasn't even the first game, but it's still kind of fun to learn about. And
it is very
talk
Bondian.
About it's weird. It's like a weird Wild West of video games era at the beginning there.
It feels very like it's an undercover
anything off of that
James Bond thing, you know.
I think you've muted yourself.
Have you muted us? You've muted us.
No.
Really? You hear us?
You hear us?
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been talking. So.
Have you?
Yeah, she was.
I'm like, mom.
So your volume did go down. My volume did go down, but I could still like hear you.
Okay. Also, my mic is like perfectly in front of my mouth, so I'm just like, nah, blah, 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 blah. And it's like the parents.
I'll make sure I'm going to hold the volume down.
And here's the thing. I was saying nothing of value, so we're totally good.
You're good.
Onward.
Yes.
No, I just felt like I was just rambling, and I was like, "I'm not. I don't
that's,
know."
That's why we have you on. We're like, keep talking, please.
Ramble away. Yeah. It is interesting that the very first video game of James Bond is not James Bond, but in theory and flavor.
But he's technically never James Bond. He's James Ming Sinclair or whatever, and James Sinjin Smythe. Sinjin Smythe, and he's James Beam and James whatever. And so this is very like, if we're like really reaching, we could be like, it's an undercover Bond. Get
this
it?
This is a very obscure movie quote that James Sinjin Smythe.
Sinjin Smythe.
Would you get that one, Ben?
Even though I just said what movie it's from.
James Sinjin Smythe.
It's A View to a Kill.
John Jacob Jekyllheimer Smith.
Yeah.
Jensen Werben Jagerman Jensen. Wait, what is it? Damn it. How does it go?
He was number one. Smitty.
It's Smitty Werben.
Smitty Werben. Yeah, Werben Jagerman Jensen. There we go. Oh, we did it, guys.
It was his hat, Mr. Krabs. but. Anyway, ultimately, when the rights went to Parker Brothers, they started churning out a lot of games. And this is where when I said, like, it kind of mirrors the early era of video game history. It is this kind of Wild West where the problem at the time, especially in the early Atari 2600 days, was you could just kind of make games. It didn't matter if they were good. It didn't matter if they were quality. Nothing mattered. So people were just pumping out garbage constantly in just to get it onto the Atari 2600 or the Amiga or whatever they were putting out. And it was literally the Jurassic Park lawyer, like, people will buy it. People will pay it. and that's ultimately what it was. But that hurt the video game industry because people were buying this junk more or less. And then ultimately they didn't want trust games anymore. So early on in Bond's life cycle, a lot of the games were just chopped up versions of other games, repurposed games that weren't meant to be a Bond game in the first place. And in like really weird cases, for example, like the first official Bond game was just called James Bond 007. And it's a platformer. It's like a side scrolling platformer, but you play in a car. It's like you're like driving along and like jumping. It's like kind of looks like it's weird.
The
it's
car
a weird,
jumps.
Yeah, like it like boosts up. It looks like a boat more so. Sometimes it's a goofy. It's goofy. It's interesting. But that was on the Atari 2600. That was on the Commodore 64, ColecoVision, a couple other systems. But yeah, it's a side-scrolling vehicle combat game, which is even really interesting, even for like the Atari. Because if you've seen Atari gameplay, it's not impressive.
Are any of these games so far, all two of them that you've mentioned, rare at all? Like, are they like, if you find it, you know?
I actually don't know if like any of these are, because I didn't really look into like the prices around them. I can say pretty confidently that it just in my experience, I only have one Atari game on the shelf. I'm pretty sure Gus has more Atari games than me. Atari games aren't very expensive generally.
Okay.
They're usually mass produced like crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the legend, like with like for E.T., for example, which is one of the games that Gus has, that kind of ultimately is blamed for like the last straw of the video game crash of 1985. Or 1983, sorry. 85 is when it came back up. But 83, because games were just bad quality, poor quality, and famously they had so many copies of like E.T. left over that the urban legend for a very long time was that they buried all the unused copies in a landfill in New Mexico to get rid of them. That's what I mean by like it's there's this kind of weird era on the Atari where they were just pumping out games, because they did James Bond 007, they did A View to a Kill, which released simultaneously. There was one version that was a text adventure game. There was another one that was more like an action game. So there was like two versions of A View to a Kill. There was Goldfinger. There was Living Daylights. And then it starts to get kind of weird. Like there was Live and Let Die, which was actually a game called Aqua Jet that they just slapped Live and Let Die on. Because they were basing it off of the boat the boat scene, and mm-hmm. they were like, "Oh, well, there's a boat in the movie. Put it in the game." But it's, I mean, it's, again, it's Bond in name only. That one was, yeah, complete asset flip. Mm-hmm. It literally, it's like 90% of the plot isn't there. It's just there's training levels that take place in like the Sahara Desert and the North Pole, and like a lot of that movie's in Louisiana. Like it's very, very weird. There's only like three levels in it too. It's a small game. Then there's, yeah, the training levels. The final level of the game, you do go to New Orleans and you have to like disrupt a drug operation. So it's okay. Something there a bit, but mm-hmm. not, you know, again, otherwise. Reaching. Yeah. Reaching the coolest thing from this era, the most interesting detail I found, or the thing that I thought was just kind of fun, was The Spy Who Loved Me. When that came out, it's a top down. So the camera's above, and you're driving in a car, and the car has gadgets, and it's a cool looking game. It's a vertical action game in a car, but it looks like the game Spy Hunter. Mm-hmm. Now Spy Hunter is a really, really famous game from the time. It was made by Midway, in 1983. It was an arcade game, and Spy Hunter is, I would argue, really iconic for that era. It's The Rock is in a movie, a Spy Hunter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that movie.
You and everyone else that just heard me say that. it's interesting because Spy Hunter originally was supposed to be a Bond game. Like Midway made it with the hopes of getting the license to Bond, and they couldn't. They couldn't get the license to Bond. So they originally, the vehicle was in Spy Hunter was a Lotus Esprit.
Esprit.
I'm just a Western Pennsylvanian dummy.
How is it spelled?
Has an Esprit right there.
Esprit. Esprit.
Oh, Esprit.
That's an Esprit.
That
one.
Means
one
spirit esprits. In French.
Give me one of them. Give me one of them Lotus Esprits. that's what it sounds like. It's like going with, that was that commercial a few years back when Jeff Bridges playing the dude, he's like, give me a Stella Artois. Like that's what it felt like. it was supposed to be a Bond game, and they basically just like scrubbed everything from it, even though the car in the game is that and everything like that. It was supposed to be a Bond game, and they just scrubbed any aspect of it being Bond from it. So it was kind of Bond in gameplay and Bond in every other aspect except mm-hmm. for name. Mm-hmm. And when The Spy Who Loved Me came out, people criticized it because it was a ripoff of this game that was supposed to be a Bond game but wasn't a Bond game. So it's kind of like an ironic twist kind of deal where they had this game that was definitely, it was much better, much more beloved, but it wasn't a Bond game, and then the game that tried to copy it. It has a really cool, soundtrack too. Like it's got like remixes of different songs. It's got a lot of 80s, like late hip hop stylings, that you should give a listen. Like that could be on our Bond dancing game. Cause it's pretty good actually. Like the James Bond theme in it it's like all the 16 bit remix too of the traditional cool. like Bond theme. It's very good. Yeah, it's cool.
Can you find it on Spotify? Or
I mean, you can definitely find it on YouTube. I heard it on a different video when I was like looking into this. The IGN, for anyone that's interested, if you've gone this far, maybe you're willing to go a little bit further. Yeah. IGN posted like a 40 minute long like Bond breakdown of all the games just the other day in preparation for First Light coming out. It's very good, very well done, but it breaks down the music from that game in there as well. It was very good.
Cool.
It was fun to listen.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, that's ultimately kind of the lead up, because after that you had Spy Loved Me, then you had like different games. Like there was a cool one. It was James Bond The Stealth Affair, and it was a point and click adventure. So you'd like just kind of puzzle solvey, like click here, it would zoom in, you'd find things to like different clues, different things like that. James Bond Jr., which I didn't know was a thing until I looked into all this.
What?
I will allow, I'll allow Gus to explain that, because I really didn't dive much into other. It was a game based on a TV show, a cartoon.
Yeah, it was a cartoon. Didn't have too many episodes, and it's not great. It's like those cheesy like late 80s.
Trying to sell toys.
Yeah, it reminded me of like I don't know, G.I. Joe Mask. What was it? Wheel Warriors.
Yep.
Like those like late 80s kind of cartoons. I mean,
they made like RoboCop a cartoon. Like,
oh, yeah.
They were doing everything cartoons.
Hey, this isn't for kids. Junior. Ah, yeah. There we go.
It's not even like he's not even. I think he is a James. Like he's James Bond is his name, but he's like James Bond's nephew or something.
Like Jimmy Bond.
It's not his son. It's his nephew.
Yeah,
I think
you're right. Yeah, I don't remember, but that sounds accurate too. Well, you want to give yourself a treat? Look up Jaws from James Bond Jr. That looks like it was designed to be a toy, for sure.
I think too with that going back to the James Bond stealth affair, the point and click one. That one was funny because if I'm not mistaken, I might be mistaken in this, but I'm pretty sure that one was a It was a game called Operation Stealth, and they just slapped James Bond on the name. Like, they just slapped James Bond on the title to make it sound better and cooler and sell more. Mm-hmm. And the game takes place in America. And so when they reworked it, it is Bond. I'm pretty sure this was this game. It is Bond. Like, he's the character, but you're taking, like, orders from the CIA and not MI6. Like, you're just... It's weird because it's like they just flipped assets because that's what they did. Yeah. And then after James Bond Jr., you had James Bond 007, The Duel, which was on the Genesis and Master System. That was a platformer game. That one featured Timothy Dalton. That was a Timothy Dalton joint. But after that, it shifts to the 3D era. So that was about a decade there from 82 really to 93.
Quick question.
All the different games.
Before we go into the 3D era, were these successful? Like, were they like, we got to keep doing this? Like, this is it.
Moderately. Like,
okay.
Within that era, I don't think any of them were like beloved for the time, but all moderately successful to a degree. Some more than others, some not very well, but overall, that was the thing is back then, because like when we were growing up, video game tie-ins weren't necessarily viewed in a very good light, because oftentimes they were just kind of thrown out there to meet a deadline of a movie coming out. You get it out there with the movie and the hype, and people will buy it because they want to, you know, that movie was great, I'm going to go play the video game. And the video game would generally stink.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the olden days, in the 80s and 90s, a lot of times that was what sold. You went off the cover of the game. You know, there wasn't internet. There wasn't, you know, G4, what we grew up with, which was like a television channel dedicated to video games. There wasn't YouTube to look into it. There was magazines here and there. But otherwise, a lot of times you go off the artwork. I actually have a book back here called Art of Atari. But it's a lot of the artworks on the games. And that was oftentimes what you were buying the games off of, was what was on the cover of the game, what was on the back of the game, and you went from there. That was a big seller. There was a reason why, like, when Atari got the rights to E.T., it was a big deal. They spent a lot of money to, like, secure the rights to E.T., of all things, to make an E.T. game, which, like, I love E.T. I know you both love E.T. That sounds weird. Like, we got to spend a lot of money to secure the rights to E.T. to make this E.T. video game. But it was big back then. Movie tie-ins were big.
Yeah, I mean, okay. E.T. made almost $1 billion back in 1982.
Let's make $1 billion.
We got to pump this video game.
And they
did.
They only,
infamously, it's like maybe the worst video game ever made. I say maybe because it's really not, but
it's not that bad. Yeah, it's bad, but it's not like the worst ever. Mm-hmm. It just was the straw that broke the camel's back. It was the last Jenga piece. Mm-hmm.
At this point in video game history with James Bond, I can safely say I have never played any of these.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do have a memory of one of them. Back in our hometown, there was the local video, or not video game rental store, the just movie rental store. And they had video games of every kind of console that was around at that time. But not with the video games. It was actually at the counter where you would check out the movies, like, you know, pay and all that. Behind the counter, there were some really old video games. And one of them was 007 The Duel. I remember seeing Timothy Dalton back there, you know, standing there with his gun, but we didn't have the console it was for. It was probably, like you said, what was it, Master System or something.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing that.
Genesis, yeah.
Genesis, okay. Regardless, we didn't have it. But I found it very odd that was back there, but not with the other video games. So
yeah.
I didn't remember what it was.
That kind of sounds like someone took it and put it down.
Yeah, it was always there for years and years.
Oh, no.
And I always thought it was License to Kill, but now that you're saying it's The Duel, and with featuring Timothy Dalton on the cover, yeah. I just looked it up. I'm like, yep, that was it. So yeah, that was a cool memory. But now where we're heading into in this journey, this history of Bond video games, this is where I come in. For sure. Yeah. And you.
Yeah, it's interesting at this point because you have the 3D era, which is really where everyone kind of locks in. Because in 1997, 2 years after the movie, they released GoldenEye. And GoldenEye has become synonymous with not only James Bond video games in general. For lack of a better term, at the time, shooting games, first person shooters on console stunk. They couldn't quite figure out how to make it so you aim with D-pad or with a trigger. Games like Doom were usually clunky on consoles, different games of that nature. And so first person shooters are generally really only done well or done right on a computer. And this was the first game that actually more or less popularized the genre on console, and really made one of the biggest reasons as to why you should buy an N64 over a PlayStation, because PlayStation was crushing it at the time. So with the release of GoldenEye, that was rare. It was a notoriously late arrival. It released 2 years after GoldenEye, only it was like 2 months before Tomorrow Never Dies came out. So it was like they usually tried to get the game out with the movie, and it was forever. It was a complete rookie team of developers. They had never really worked on a game like that. And it was Rare very famously did, you know, some of Gus's favorite games, with Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, Donkey Kong Country, Donkey Kong 64, etc. Now owned by Microsoft, more recently Sea of Thieves is their game.
Oh,
but
yeah, that's them.
Mm-hmm. That's like one of the only things they've really done since Microsoft bought them, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. shortly after Microsoft bought them, they did a couple things, and then Microsoft really put them on like developing the avatars that they used to use on like the menu and stuff to combat the Miis for the Wii. But yeah, that Sea of Thieves is them. They were working on another game, but it's been like one of those where it got announced and then you never heard anything about it ever again.
So a rookie team on Rareware that worked on GoldenEye, probably while a team was working on Banjo-Kazooie.
It was roughly a dozen people were working on it. 8 of them had never worked on a commercial video game before.
Mm.
The expectations were ridiculously low. And again, they were usually like fast paced run and gun shooters. That's usually it was boomer shooter is what it's called. There's Doom clones. You're run around, monsters are coming at you, you're shooting everything and running. This one revolutionized the genre because it had somewhat stealth mechanics. You could use sniper rifles. You had locational damage. If you shot them in the leg, it didn't kill them right away. You shot them in the head, it might drop them. There were story-driven objectives. You'd have to find certain things and go from there. There was a lot of different aspects. You know, even the enemies would drop their weapon. You could change if you change the difficulty, it could change the objectives you were doing. And all that was really new. That had never happened in a game up until that point, at least tying it all together. But the big thing with it was the multiplayer. The game, that was what a lot of people know the game for. I was actually just watching an interview with Cody Rhodes. He was saying how when he has friends over, that's what they would do. I have friends over, we'll hook up N64s and we'll play GoldenEye. And I was like, okay. he's like, it's because it was revolutionary though, because the N64 had four controller ports, whereas PlayStation 2 only had two. Or I'm sorry, PlayStation 1. Well, PlayStation 2 as well, but PlayStation 1 at the time only had two. And so ultimately, multiplayer was really big on the 64, and it wasn't in the game. Like they didn't have it wasn't multiplayer wasn't in their programming notes. They weren't going to do it. And roughly a month at the very end of development, there was a programmer. His name was Steve Ellis. He decided to kind of take on this unauthorized side project without really any of Nintendo's management knowing, because Nintendo had a really large stake in Rare and they were producing this game. And so it was actually Shigeru Miyamoto, who, if those who don't know, creator of Mario and Zelda and you know, one of Nintendo
good
legends.
Ones.
Yes. yes, exactly.
Donkey Kong, yeah. Star Fox, Metroid.
He was really uncomfortable with it when he saw it. He saw how realistic all the guns looked, the close-up kills, all of it. And he actually sent a fax to the team that was working on the game, asking that they change the ending so that Bond visits all the guards that he shot in the hospital and shakes their hands to make peace with them, because he didn't like the idea of that happening. So it's like there was a lot of weird things and like interesting things. It's like, yeah, the multiplayer wasn't supposed to be in the game. Nintendo didn't even know about it, but got in there anyways, ultimately, and they ended up approving it. And Miyamoto's like, I don't like this violence in this violent game.
Is that why they put paintball mode in, maybe?
More than likely. Although, again, they were doing a lot of just like fun things on this game. The Rumble Pack Reload, GoldenEye, was one of the key titles to emphasize Rumble. Nowadays, controllers have vibration in the controllers. Famously, like the PlayStation controller was called a Dual Shock when they re-updated it, because the shock was the vibration. Nintendo, they made the Rumble Pack, where it was a thing you literally plugged into the controller and it made your controller shake. This was one of the games that really amped that up, made people want to use it. It was an idea for like reloading, like if you reloaded, it would vibrate. But it was interesting. They were like trying to work on that. It just didn't quite work in practice. They wanted to program in. They actually were planning on programming in Sean Connery, Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton. There is things that like they did do that as multiplayer characters, but it was at the very last minute. The licensing company came in and was like, yeah, you can't use their likeness because you don't have the rights to them. Like they had Brosnan, but they didn't have all the other Bonds, so they couldn't use those. If you've ever looked at an N64 controller, the thing, I love it. I think it's fantastic. I also can understand it. It's garbage. It looks like a little much, or a lot of much. And so, yeah, ultimately, game came out, and it was one of the best-selling titles on the N64. It revolutionized the genre. It was one of the key reasons to even get an N64. It was the game that people that didn't have an N64 wanted to go to their friend's house to play the N64 for. That's the one that I'm sure, Gus, you have the most fond memories with overall.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, we lived in a time where it's like, hey, I want this game, GoldenEye. It's like, well, doesn't the neighbor kid have it? Like, yeah, well, go over there and play it. So we were over at the neighbor kid's house quite a bit playing GoldenEye, and we'd borrow it. And I think we still have that copy. We're still borrowing it 30 years later. But
that's not yours.
he obviously doesn't need it.
Doesn't need it. Didn't ask for it back. No, actually, I asked him in high school. I was like, hey, can I keep that? He's like, yeah, yeah, sure.
Wow. Okay. Hey, good for him.
Am I absolved? Yeah. Anyway, and I would play that game to no end. It's what introduced me to James Bond, what introduced you, Ben, to James Bond, for sure.
I mean, GoldenEye, peek behind the curtain, GoldenEye is just my favorite Bond movie. So,
yeah. same here. And, you know, you could get the Game Shark and pop that in and get even extra cheats, even more cheats. And you could like walk through doors and be invincible. And we would play like multiplayer mode and go into different areas in the maps that you weren't supposed to be able to access. And we'd play like hide and seek. Well, hide and go shoot. You know?
You were not friendly back then. You would not let me win.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was very competitive and what's not letting little brother win at anything.
There was a few. It was when I was in college, I want to say. We would play Smash Brothers, and this was before either of us. Like, we were always good at Smash Brothers, but we were never like, I think we're both better at Smash Brothers now. But back then, I remember you would consistently just like choose not to win because you're like, ah, let's other people win, let them have a moment. I'm like, where was that? Yeah. I hid our copy of Mario Party 4, 5, and we lost it. I hid it because he beat me. And
he hit it so good, he forgot where he hit it.
And it's gone now.
That game's like $100 now.
Well, it's gone. You shouldn't have stole my star.
You learned your lesson.
Yeah. No, GoldenEye was definitely, not only was it a great game for the time, and I have all these like wonderful memories, and it definitely kickstarted my love for James Bond. I still play that game to this day, like maybe every other year. I crank it on and I play it. Not only play it, I like play the story. I beat it.
Mm-hmm. It's a quick play. It's fun though. Mm-hmm. If you're not used to the controllers, the control, it can be a little rough. Like especially on Switch. On Switch Online, if you play it there, the controls are a little rough. You have to mess with them. If you play it on Xbox, it just automatically updates the controls for you, mm-hmm. and it actually is fairly smooth. I played it most recently.
I just dust off the old bird and play Nintendo 64. I don't even need to dust it off. It's always pretty ready to go.
Stuck in there.
It's ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice and warm.
So what
cartridge doesn't even blown in or nothing.
Yeah. What came after GoldenEye then?
It's kind of weird because like, so in terms of when I was setting up, like, what are my talking points going to be? These are the ones I was like, I'm going to skip these. But James Bond 007 for the Game Boy, which I've seen that cartridge quite a bit, actually. Yeah, it's a fun looking cartridge. I never realized this. And looking at it, it's a Zelda-like. Like, it plays like a top-down Zelda in a way. So I kind of want to try it now. It's probably no good. But yeah.
I see it at half-priced books often for some reason.
Then there was Tomorrow Never Dies. That was on the PlayStation. World Is Not Enough. That was on N64, PlayStation, and Game Boy Color. I gave you the opportunity to buy that recently. You were at a store with me, and it was there. It's still there on the Game Boy Color. The World Is Not Enough. I remember not, like, it's funny because like nowadays when the sequel to a game comes out, it's usually like the better version. You forget about the old one, whereas like growing up you'd still play the old one. And I just remember like World Is Not Enough was just not GoldenEye. Like, it was like, yeah, it's just not GoldenEye.
That's accurate. I did just play a little bit of World Is Not Enough recently, and it actually plays pretty smooth. I remember playing it when I was younger, but I remember it being very difficult, very hard. Didn't have like the cheats like GoldenEye has. Not that I, you know, you need them to play the game, but it lacked a little bit of je ne sais quoi. It lacked some character.
The unhingedness of it all.
Yeah, but there's still some fun to be had, especially multiplayer. It had bots you could set up.
Yep.
So you could, you know, play against others, and the levels weren't as creative though. And if somehow the graphics looked worse, but different team making that game.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And with that one too, something you have to kind of consider with as to why maybe I don't know this 100%. I didn't really dive into the development of that game. I'm just the N64 PlayStation, the PlayStation had slightly worse graphics generally than the N64, because the N64 with its cartridges, even though they were slower, it couldn't hold as much data, or they were faster, they couldn't hold as much data though as a CD. So it could have been because that game did come out on the PlayStation. Maybe it was just a port, more or less. Yeah, PlayStation was selling more copies. I don't know. That's just me.
I remember speculating. I remember a different person that we would go and play The World's Not Enough at their house. They had it on PlayStation, and it had cutscenes. Yeah, scenes from the movie.
That was fairly common at that time with PlayStation. I mean, that was the whole reason, for example, we're getting off topic, but like Square Enix or Squaresoft at the time, they ditched Nintendo because Nintendo was going with cartridges, and Square wanted to do with the next Final Fantasy. They wanted it to have more. They wanted it to look better. They wanted to have music, like better music and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't do that with cartridge. And so they asked Nintendo, like, please don't do that. And they did it. And they went to PlayStation and made Final Fantasy VII. And that's, you know, one of the most iconic video games in history. And so, yeah, that was common, though. I mean, that was even common in GameCube era, where the mini discs couldn't hold as much as a regular DVD. Mm-hmm. And so they would just chop the games up, like remove cutscenes, remove music, different things like that. But regardless, World Is Not Enough into 007 Racing, which could be awesome. I mean, I know it's not good, but also I'm like, that could be good. That could be a good game. Yeah.
Great idea.
Yeah. Like I think of like a Twisted Metal, like, or like Star Wars Pod Racer, but with guns coming out of your cars. But then 2001 is really where I think it falls more into our realm with James Bond 007 Agent Under Fire. I just did a rapid retrospective on my channel on that one, because that's the game that I have the fondest memories for. Like, I remember playing GoldenEye, but Agent Under Fire is the one I played the most of personally growing up on the GameCube. And that one was cool because it was just so different from anything they had done prior. Pretty much every game they had done before that was either, you know, it was unoriginal to a degree, whether it was a movie tie-in or another game completely that they just slapped the 007 logo on. Agent Under Fire was supposed to be World Is Not Enough, but for the PS2. It was supposed to be an updated version of that. But the movie was already so old at that point, or was just getting out of the zeitgeist. And so they're like, why are we trying to make this game? No one's going to care for it. So they just decided to just make an original game. And I think that's cool. Anytime a video game can take like a movie property and say, we're just going to do that, but our own thing here, is a cool idea. It's got an interesting plot to it. It's the bad guy owns this firm that's gonna, you know, clone politicians and people in positions of power and take over the world, which is fun.
Very, very Bondian. Yeah,
yeah. It's an interesting like plot. It's not as grounded as some can be, but it's still pretty interesting, I think.
But that's I've slowly been discovering that's my kind of Bond. I like the unrealistic Bond. I mean, I like the realistic as well, of course, but my bread and butter, I think, is I like some cheese with my steak. You know?
I mean, I remember in college, I rewatched all the Brosnan movies, and I remember it was the first time I actually watched start to finish Tomorrow Never Dies. And I remember like talking to you on the phone later after I watched it. I'm like, his plot was great. And it's pretty simple. But maybe I'm the opposite. Maybe I'm like, I want simple. I want a guy just wants to start a war to have news. Like, I want that.
Did you hear Margot's take on the plot of Quantum of Solace, which I know you and I really enjoy? You know, he's like, you know, having a monopoly on water.
Yeah.
It's Fievel Goes West.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah. Which doesn't make it a bad movie.
Could we make like a Fievel James Bond crossover where Fievel is Bond?
It's called Fievel Goes West.
Ah, yeah. Okay. It's that.
Yeah.
There you got Jimmy Stewart in there as Wiley Burp.
It really is like guy with weird accent, monopoly on water, charms girl.
Shootout.
Guy, you know, ragged, worn out, cross the desert guy, big old explosion, saves the day. Doesn't bang the girl, both movies.
So, okay.
Just saying. I think I made my point. So, anyways, the history of James
Agent Under Fire. Agent Under Fire. They do the clone plot, which is very good. And it's fun and interesting. And it is the cool thing that I liked about this one, that they're kind of going back to a degree, is, you know, having a completely original Bond as James Bond. Andrew Bicknell was the actor to portray him, to voice him. And he did like the acting of it and everything. It was kind of loosely based on him. But instead, what they did was they decided to do, because they couldn't get the rights, the likeness to Brosnan. So they decided to make an everyman Bond. Just take Bond and do kind of an amalgamation of everyone. You know, like take Sean Connery's voice and Pierce Brosnan's eyes and Timothy Dalton's lips, George Lazenby's like hands. I don't know. they did an everyman Bond, which was a cool idea. And you do see it. Like when you look at the James Bond in Agent Under Fire, you're like, yep, that's James Bond. It's a quaint James Bond. Great value James Bond members mark. Ultimately it works, and the game had really good and fun multiplayer. You could use it, really leaned into gadgets and gadget play, things like the Q Claw, things like where you could zip around the map. There was gadgets where you'd like scan documents, and the car chases were really fun because there was like rockets coming out of the car and everything. It was just really James Bond fun in game form, done really, really well for a new brand, like a modern console. And it's kind of a forgotten gem. It's like people remember it definitely when you show it to them. I had a friend that watched my retrospective the other day, and he's like, I remembered this game, and I played through it. We played it all the time, and I did not know it was a Bond game.
Really?
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. He was like, I didn't know what it was. He had a memory. He said it was right when he saw the car chase scene. He's like, I remember this. I played this with my brother.
Do you think there's a movie that you could watch and not realize is a James Bond movie?
Oof.
Like
the original Casino Royale.
Yeah. That's a great answer. That is a great answer.
Because they don't even realize it's a James Bond movie.
I'll just test that out.
I have some pretty deep nostalgia for Agent Under Fire. Back in 2001, I saved up my pocket money enough that I could buy a GameCube. Mm-hmm. Two controllers. Well, it came with a controller, but you know, second controller. And I bought two games. I bought Simpsons Hit and Run. No, sorry, Simpsons Road Rage. Simpsons Road Rage and 007 Agent Under Fire. That was our first GameCube game. It was Agent Under Fire.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I seem to have this memory though. What did you buy that with was our grandmother watching us at the time? Was that when I burnt my thumb on the way home?
I don't know, but maybe, yeah.
Was it a cigarette lighter?
Yes.
I mean, seriously?
Yes. I'm pretty, because I remember.
They were in the seat, these cigarette lighters.
You bought that game, and then we were on our way home, and yeah. Gus pretended to pop in the lighter and, like, touched it to his fingers. Like, see, doesn't hurt. And then I pressed it in, pulled it out, and just branded my thumb with it. And I remember playing Simpsons Hit and Run with a bag of ice on my hand, like, and playing through the, I was dedicated.
So typical of August. Just like, see, harmless for me, harmful for you, funny prank, me laugh, you cry. Like,
hey, what? he got me good.
I just wanted you to have the grooves in your thumb that the GameCube has at the top of their joystick.
Hey, it molded into it. It's there still.
Snug.
I mean, yeah, that's because I think it was then. I think our grandma took us to the store, you bought it, and then it was on the way home that I just branded my thumb.
Oh, nice. Gosh. One time we had a bike pump in in the car, and my mom had, she had taken out the cigarette lighter because you could, you know, it was like how you could charge something. Yeah. I don't know, but she wasn't, we didn't have anything to charge. She just took it out for some reason. And I just took the spike of the bike pump and I just stuck it in there and it went and like the whole car, whatever, this and that. She was not happy. I was 12 years old. There was no reason for me to do that. Yeah.
You were just curious to see what happened.
That's right. I found out.
You know, I'm something of a scientist myself. That's what you're trying to be.
Exactly. See.
But, you know, I remember playing Agent Under Fire very extensively. And like you were saying, the multiplayer, there was nothing like it. Like, is it better than the GoldenEye multiplayer? Maybe so. Maybe not the maps. One of them, at least.
Yeah. Like, if that game would have come out today, they could have done like DLCs with GoldenEye maps on it. Like, it would have been, you know, it would have been cool.
But they should still do that.
I mean, when I was making the video, I was watching gameplay footage of like the courtyard map with like the tower and just like Q-clawing up into it. And just, and that game had bots too. So you could play it without, you know, it wasn't just like Gus versus me. It was like, we could have a bunch of people. I remember doing, explosives only and doing like proximity bombs and different things like that.
Capture the flag, things like that.
Yeah. It was a really good time. And that leads right into Nightfire, which is the next game that came. And was honestly what I love most about just video game history is just how quick things came out back then. Because it literally went James Bond, Agent Under Fire in 2001. And then 2002, James Bond Nightfire came out. And there is a big sect of people that think Nightfire is better than Agent Under Fire. So when we look at Nightfire, it's more of Bond and video game, original plot, everything like that. Multiplayer is fantastic and fun. They introduced a couple new things that were really cool for the time. But the big kind of historical moment with that one was the first Bond game to secure Brosnan's likeness, not his voice. So it looks like him, but it doesn't sound like him. But he's on the cover. It's a pretty solid lookalike. A lot of people have a lot of memories of that. We never owned that one, but we went to a friend's house very frequently and played it there.
Same deal. Neighbor kids got it. Go play it there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually recently played Nightfire and played the story and, you know, beat the campaign mode last year. And I did really enjoy it. It's one of those, like, I love Agent Under Fire too much. And I've, you know, sat with it for 20 some years. I don't like Nightfire as much. Now, when Nightfire came out and we played it a lot at our friend's house, it was great. The multiplayer was great. And there was a level called Skyrail, which was like in a snowy, like a cliffside. There's a house you could explore through. There was this like monorail that would go back and forth. And you could ride it and
hide.
Yeah. I have a memory of being Odd Job, and I loved playing Odd Job because he had a secret weapon. He had the hat, and you could throw the hat. And in some levels it would always like curve with the wind for some reason, but not in Skyrail. For some reason you could just throw it and it would just go straight forever until it hit something. And I remember I was at the other end of the map and I just blindly threw it, and I nailed our friend, and I don't know if I won, but I felt like I won.
You pulled it off. I mean, that's the map that, like, that's where my nostalgia is that map. And again, I was the annoying younger brother at that house very frequently at that friend's house in hindsight. But I remember that map quite a bit. And again, watching gameplay of it, I was like, this is awesome. Mm. And they did. They upped the ante with that one. Like, the Agent Under Fire has an opening, but it's just cutscenes from the game playing the regular Bond theme, whereas Nightfire has an actual opening. It's got a song, performance, it looks like a Bond movie, it's got Brosnan, it's legit. A lot of people like it because it has that flair, that actual cinematic flair to it. But then, a year later or 2 years later, depending on the version, Game Boy Advance, which I kind of want to try the Game Boy Advance version, PS2, Xbox, and GameCube, Everything or Nothing came out, which, firstly, I don't know about you, I've always loved that title for like a Bond thing, like Everything or Nothing. That's a cool Bond name for just an entity.
That's actually the saying of like the Broccolis and Harry Saltzman. That's the name of their company that makes the Bond movies, is Eon.
Yeah.
Eon, everything or nothing.
Wow. Yeah. I did not know that. Yeah, that's awesome. Like I've just always really liked that name. And what was cool with that one was they were trying to amp it up even more. Like, the first one was, we're going to try and do something completely original and do this Bond game. Then there was Nightfire that was like, we're going to do it original, it's going to be game, but we're also going to tie in the cinematic. Everything or Nothing was really trying to be both. It was like 50-50. Like, we're going to be cinematic and a game. And they did a bunch of things to make that happen. First off, there's the opening sequence, which is fantastic. The theme song of that game, I mean, it's been in the old noggin for years. For a game that I never really beat, I watch you play it, and I play the motorcycle level quite a bit. But it really almost acts as like an unofficial fifth film for Brosnan, because he not only gave his likeness to the movie, but he also is the voice. He voiced the movie. And so it plays out like a movie. It's could be seen as maybe his, some fans maybe view it as like a canonical final performance for him.
A lot of people do. Cause yeah, that game not only plays like a game, but it does play like a movie, like you said. But it had, you know, Richard Kiel return as Jaws. It had Willem Dafoe as the main villain. It had
Elizabeth Smart's in it. There's a lot of
Jen Elizabeth and Heidi Klum.
Yes, yeah, it had a crazy John Cleese was in it, Judi Dench. Mm-hmm. It had a lot going for it, and it changed the perspective as well. All the Bond games up to that point that were, you know, from GoldenEye on had been first person, and this went third person, so you were watching Bond. And it was less you are Bond and more you're watching him. You're playing as Bond. You're not Bond. You're playing Pierce Brosnan's Bond.
I know they tried that in like Tomorrow Never Dies, but that game just was a big old stinker, if I recall.
It's not very well loved. Mm-hmm. The game, it had like a hand-to-hand combat system. It had early mechanic of snap cover, kinda, where you could hide behind cover. That became really popular later on down the line with games like Gears of War and other things like that. It had Bond Sense, which was like it was popular mechanic, but slows down time, lets you shoot specific things. And a bunch of other things like that. The motorcycle scenes, the car riding, a lot of this boiled down. EA had, I've said it twice for a lot of these games, they had really good car mechanics. EA had the need for speed games, which is like their racing franchise. And so they leveraged a lot of that experience to make their driving really good. And it had a co-op campaign, so you could play it with someone else, which was really cool. Everything or Nothing gave us that last real, that's kind of the last Bond game that I think a lot of people view fondly. After that, things kind of go, kind of stave off, because after that, you get things like Rogue Agent, which I've always wanted to love, but it's really a misleading title, because it's like GoldenEye Rogue Agent. And it's not even Bond, it's like a reckless MI6 agent who's fired for brutality, and you're working with like villains, and it's weird.
He's got a golden eye.
Yeah, it's like they're like, no, literally. It just didn't have it had a lot going against it. That came out technically before Everything or Nothing. I mean, it did come out before Everything or Nothing, but it came out right around Halo 2 and Half-Life 2, which are two of the biggest first person shooters in history. So it just kind of ended. Did you know it ends on a cliffhanger?
Yes. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It ended on a cliffhanger. They were like, we're going to have a sequel. And then the sequel was literally immediately canceled because it did so poorly. And mm-hmm. that was actually what made EA go, well, if we're not going to do that, let's do another Bond game. And that's where they pivoted to make From Russia with Love with Sean Connery coming back. And From Russia with Love was EA's last game with the license. And it was fairly well loved. This third person shooter plays really well, plays very similar to Everything or Nothing, but Sean Connery's likeness, Sean Connery as voicing Bond. And that again is a big deal because that's is also his final performance as Bond, official mm-hmm. performance as Bond.
A lot of people, I would argue, have nostalgia for that game too. I mean, we bought it, we played it a lot. It was very jarring for me. One, at the time, I was like, why, of all the video games, why From Russia with Love? Or all the movies, of all the movies to pick from, why From Russia with Love? And then you got young Sean Connery with like the oldest man voice ever, like really old Sean Connery voice.
Honestly, yeah. It would have been fun in hindsight to do like an old James Bond story. like what's he up to now? Like retired Bond. But it's Sean Connery's Bond. That would have been neat. I would have played that. I mean, I'll play this too, but so that's where EA, it kind of falls off a bit for them. I won't go much into what Ubisoft did with the titles after that. Activision got the rights. And they didn't make much. They did like a Casino Royale mobile game. They did a Quantum of Solace game. Quantum of Solace game was actually made by Infinity Ward. Infinity Ward is who made Call of Duty Modern Warfare, which is one of the best Call of Duty games. So the game plays like Call of Duty. It's kind of weird, but it wasn't like, you know, fine enough. They re-released GoldenEye on the Wii, which was always fun. We had that. You got a Wii Zapper with it. No, you didn't get a Wii Zapper. You got a golden controller with it, which is fun.
And Daniel Craig did his likeness and his voice for that.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one on the Wii. Then they released Bloodstone, which was another original story that a lot of people kind of forget about because it is supposedly not that bad. It's actually pretty fun. It's original Daniel Craig story. It's, you know, it's got interest. I was watching gameplay on it when I was doing the retrospective, and I was like, this looks fun. It looks interesting and look cool. But what ended up kind of doing it in was 007 Legends, which for all intents and purposes was supposed to be this like big iconic end to like the Bond isms and Bond games coming forth, and ultimately ended up making them go on a 14-year hiatus. It was meant to be the 50th anniversary celebration. They were going to take campaigns. They were going to do a campaign where you played different levels based on different movies. They were going to do Goldfinger, Honor Majesty's Secret Service, Moonraker, License to Kill, Die Another Day, and Skyfall. You were going to play one movie from all the different Bonds. And you were just going to play whatever that mission was for that movie. And it's a cool idea. Play through all the different Bond heroes and versions. But nothing worked. It was like incredibly janky. It kind of ran like a Call of Duty clone, but it had, instead of stealth and like espionage, you just kind of like ran headfirst into everything. Like you weren't trying to be, you were like picking up miniguns and mowing people down and stuff. Like you weren't trying to actually do anything Bond-esque. It was like Bond in name only and like what you were looking. A lot of the boss fights were either generic or just like QTEs, like really quick time events, like press this button now. And that was it. And the game was released just before Skyfall hit theaters. And the final level of the game couldn't be included on the disc because it was supposed to be Skyfall. So the game came out before the final level of the game could even be released, because they didn't want to avoid, they didn't want to spoil the plot. They were going to let people download it later. Oh. Like, you were going to buy the game, and then the final level, they were going to let you download. The game shipped without an ending to the game because the movie wasn't out yet, which is kind of funny because, like, I've told you this before, but, like, I played Revenge of the Sith on my DS before the movie came out, like things like that. But yeah. And then the game went on hiatus for 14 years, or the series went on hiatus. There was a mobile game, James Bond World of Espionage, which was like a mobile strategy game. It got shut down shortly after. That was in 2015. And here we are, 11 years since then, but 14 years since the last actual game.
I know there's like Cypher out now, 007 Cypher, which is a mobile game. But yeah, I mean, that's also not really, I mean, it is James Bond, but it's not. He puts people to sleep. You know, he shoots them like sleeping darts and stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, with the evolution of video games, and, you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, the big one was GoldenEye, but I swear this is relevant. We didn't grow up watching our parents play video games. Mm. Most people who entered like the James Bond community and most fandoms in general, it's, oh, my grown up guardian of some form or another showed me this movie. And that's usually how people get introduced to these things. But now it is very common for a parent to play video games now that we're within that age group that is, you know, mm-hmm. procreating. Do you think that is going to influence, well, one, within the James Bond fandom, like, oh, my dad played the video game, that's how I got into James Bond. Do you see that kind of becoming a pattern, or do you think more that the movie industry, and this in general, like how, like not just James Bond exclusive, but do you think there's going to be more of a direction towards video games, or do you think it's going to stay within like the movie fandom, like the movie franchise?
So it's a bit of a mixed bag because the video game industry is kind of heading for a bit of a, we'll say, a Wild West, uncharted territory, in that things are getting really expensive. Consoles are going up in price, and there is a bit of a worry within the video game industry that it's going to start leaning more toward free-to-play experiences that you can do on your phone, right? Mm. Everyone has a phone. Maybe not everyone can afford a $1,000 console or a PC or, you know, whatever it may be, but everyone has a phone, so you just put the games on the phone. So video game industry is in a bit of a weird, like, transitional phase. So I don't know what the future looks like on that front per se, but with First Light coming out, everything I've seen on it and read on it and in the previews I've seen, it's shaping up to be a game of the year contender. And to be really, really well done. It's got a great team behind it that's known for the Hitman franchise and everything like that. So if that does really well, it could, you know, create new fans who maybe aren't interested in the Bond movies, but are interested in this game that's taking a completely new take on, you know, playing as like a 26-year-old James Bond, you know, on his first couple of missions, like, right? A rookie Bond. And it could be interesting to see, you know, if that brings people in. I do think that the movie industry is seeing and this is kind of out of my realm of any expertise, but I was reading an article recently about how it seems like more and more the generation below us, as a Gen Z below us, are going to movies more. They're like,
oh yeah, we hear them in there. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're
making, we know they're there.
So that's something though. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you can be here, but be quiet. No, but ultimately they're going, yeah. So I do think there is this hunger for more movies coming about as of late, because I think maybe people are getting a little burnt out on the constant TV-ication of things, mm-hmm. and having to wait, you know, we'll release this series. And then, I mean, that's the reason I dropped like Stranger Things, for example. It just took too long for me, and I'm an impatient person. but So I don't really know where it's going to go. I do think, though, that, you know, as it's true with many things, this, the more places there are aspects to this, the better. You know, if there's mm-hmm. Bond video games, there's Bond books, there's Bond movies, there's Bond comic books. Maybe you're not a fan of movies, books, and games, but you're a fan of comics. And that's how you were introduced to this character, and it can take you there. The more places it is, the better. And I think, you know, just in going through the history here, while it's grown with the movie industry, it grew with the video game industry. It's mm-hmm. been there since the beginning. And the fact that it went on this 14-year hiatus is indicative of where the industry is now. Mm-hmm. You know, they announced that game like 4 years ago. And then, you know, we look back to just what we talked about here. In the span of 5 years, we had like six Bond games and from mm-hmm. 2001 to 2005. Mm-hmm. And so it's a whole different landscape. Now I think, you know, when GoldenEye re-released on Xbox Live and Switch, people were really excited about it. I think there's still a love there for it. There's that video you've sent it to me before, Gus, where it's the guy like gets GoldenEye starting up and he's getting all hyped, like with his kid there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, here it goes. And it starts up. It's like, kid doesn't know what to think.
Yeah.
So
I feel every time I turn that game on, too.
Yeah. I think ultimately there's definitely a nostalgic aspect to the Bond games because it belongs in the industry, as it does in all the other industries it is in, movies and books and everything.
We've regaled, or you've regaled, the history of Bond and video games through your research or just life in general. Is there any of these games that you've talked about today that you haven't played that you would be most interested in checking out?
I think after everything I looked into when I was doing my retrospective and as well as in this is Bloodstone. Which I've seen, it's actually at my local GameStop, and I've wanted to pick it up a couple of times. But it's kind of expensive, and I say it's like $30, but it's a PS3 game, so it's kind of expensive.
You don't have PS3 to play it on.
I do. I borrowed my brother-in-law's. I do have one right now. Because my actual one's broken, but I do have one. But it's also on 360. I have a 360. Mm-hmm. I just got to give it a really big slap on the side to get the disc to eject. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it would be Bloodstone. Just because that from everything I read on it, people like it. Like it's a good enough game. It's not bad.
I've heard good things about it. That one I missed. I got GoldenEye on the Wii instead. Mm-hmm. They came out like the same day. And I chose that path. I've always wanted to check out that game, though. And you recently got me Quantum of Solace on the Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
And you hold this thing, like the way you're supposed to play it. It feels like a damn monster movie. And it's like, how? I'm very curious to dive into that one. Mm. How about you, Margo? Any of these games that we've talked about, would you be willing to hold the controller and try?
No. It's just
like, I want to play the text adventure game.
I was thinking, I was like, I bet I'd like Meat Boy, and that has nothing to do with what we were talking about.
How about Persona 5?
No. Okay, here's the thing. It's not, I'm not trying. I get so bored so quickly. If I die, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, that's it. Or if there's, guys, this is a perfect example of it. I finally got a turn with Pokemon. When I was a little girl, little baby. And I came to the point where, you know, like if there was the hedges and there was the guy blocking it. And he was like, you can't go through. go do something. And I just went, well, okay, I guess.
That's like the beginning of the game.
I know.
That's like seconds in. Because he wants you to go pick a Pokemon. He wants you to go talk to Professor Oak.
No. So I got a Pokemon. But then you go up again and he's like, you have to do something else. And I was like, guess I'm gonna just turn it off and go do something else. That's it. I don't have the patience for it. The second you show me an obstacle, I'm like, guess it's not for me. Guess it's not my day. You know?
That's just so interesting to me because, like, as I said, Gus is very much ingrained in like movies and shows, mm-hmm. and you watch a lot. You both watch a lot of stuff. And I don't, I did in like high school and college I did. And then whenever video games really clicked for me, like really, really clicked for me and became like my main hobby pastime, in around 2017, it's weird. Like if I watch a movie, I'm a leg shaker. Like I'm ready to get up and move. Like I need to, it's hard for me. Even I just said earlier in the episode, I finished a game series that I've been playing. It took me 65 hours. The next night I'm like, I'm going to take the night off. I'm not going to play a game. I'm going to watch a show. I finished Maul and I finished, it was like 11. I was like, I should play a game. And I started like looking through my shelf for an hour trying to find the next game to play. Cause when I'm playing a game, it's almost the opposite. Like the obstacle or the next objective keeps like my brain going like, okay, I just got to do this next thing. And then this next thing. Whereas with a movie, I'm supposed to sit there and enjoy it and just watch. And I, for whatever reason, I get antsy.
I do have this, I have a very vivid memory during COVID. He played Tetris Effect and
Zen.
He was killing it. And I was just watching him play. I like watching people play video games because it's like a movie. Yeah. And even if it's the blocks falling down, I remember I was sitting on the ground wrapped in a blanket and he was like everything was happening so quickly, but he was so close to winning. And I remember standing up on my knees and like bouncing up and down and like clapping my hands because I was so invested. Hey. And he was almost there. I was like a 4-year-old. It was great. I was like, because then I don't have to do any of the work. He does it for me. He has so good time. I have a good time. It's easy. It's easy.
Will you do the same with First Light? Will you
sit down
and watch the adventure?
I watched you play Hitman. It was great. I was true. Oh, that guy's not, you know, like I get like, I watch it like a movie. It's very fun. It's harmless. If you gave me the controller, here's the thing. Like Smash Bros, Super Smash Bros is a really good example. You give me the controller, I just walk off. Like, I don't even want to fight.
It's not fun.
Yeah. Because people don't believe me. I'm like, I just don't want to. And then I go.
Nah, I mean, my wife, very similar, a little more aggressive in her statement, but very similar in that, like, last weekend, my daughter wanted her to play Mario Kart. She didn't want me to play Mario Kart. She wanted my wife to play Mario Kart. My wife's like, no, I don't want to. I was like, I told her, I was like, I will set you up. You'll be fine. And so I literally went into the settings on her controller and because I do it for my daughter as well, but I made it auto accelerate, auto items, auto steer. So all you have to do is press A and it just keeps you on the track. And my wife came in first place all four games. She wouldn't even let my daughter win, but she also didn't hold the controller. Like she just, the controller was in her lap. She's like, yep, I'm playing. But,
oh man,
so good.
I get it.
Yeah.
Will you play? Potentially, would you be interested for the sake of a good squeeze?
No,
for the sake of
I'll watch you play.
Ben the common gamer.
I'll have so much to say. Just watch.
You didn't even let me ask the question.
Okay, what's the question?
Like, would you not play this? And you're like, you already said no. Wait, what?
The level is called Damn. It's in GoldenEye. It's level one. Would you hold this goofy Nintendo 64 controller and attempt Damn?
Just for the music
alone. What do you do?
You run, you shoot, and you got to get to the dam and jump off the dam.
That's too many.
It's the prequel to the movie.
You can do
it. The movie opens with him running down.
Yeah. Oh,
it's the mission before that, more or less.
That's right.
Oh, you play it, I'll watch it. And all of a sudden, I'm going to say about it. Telling you, I don't mind watching it. I see no issue. You get all the turns.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Sorry, what'd you say, Ben?
Do it for the music alone.
I'll watch it.
Music and GoldenEye.
Sure.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, with all that.
Yes. Sorry.
That is the history of James Bond in video games. Ben, the common gamer, educated us on the history of just video games in general, but James Bond in video games. You can listen to more of his teachings on YouTube. Ben, the common gamer on YouTube. And then at Instagram, is it at Ben the common gamer?
Ben underscore. Yeah, underscore.
The common gamer.
Yeah.
Follow him along. Follow him along for all his new stuff he's got coming out. He posts pretty regularly, and you get a plethora of different genres and teachings and history and thoughts and feelings and facts.
Do you have any other plugs?
Schedule wise, I try to do a longer retrospective video on YouTube every other week. So I have a new one coming out, not this Sunday, but next Sunday on a game. And then every Friday I post a quick short. I'm counting down my top 151 games that I've beaten or put 20 hours into if it didn't have a story in the last 10 years. So that'll take me like 3 years to do that. But I release a new one every Friday. So tomorrow I'm actually releasing number 149, quick YouTube short and Instagram reel on what that is. So as you're listening to this, it'll be there.
Yeah,
that is true. Go find, go slide over there and find him there. Thank you for being on A Good Squeeze. Excuse me as I clear my throat. As a thank you, whenever we have a guest on the show, I like to curate a cocktail based on them. Would you be okay? Would you give me the blessing to make the Common Gamer cocktail?
Sure. Go for it.
It's Mountain Dew Gamer Fuel. It's done.
It's just Mountain Dew Gamer Fuel. Hey, I mean, we grew up in the 360 era, and that's Mountain Dew.
It's so funny. Yes. It's funny because like he'll present this, and most people are like, oh my gosh, and you're like, sure.
Yeah, do it.
Do it.
Do it.
And you can find us on Instagram and only Instagram at A Good Squeeze, where August posts life updates, beautiful spreads, beautiful flat lays of Bond and other things. So they're called flat lays. And episode updates, any you got any thoughts, you got any queries, DM us, he'll talk to you. Not me, because I don't know what I'm talking about. And yeah, that's that on the social media front.
And you can listen to us wherever you're listening to us, wherever you find your podcasts. Hey, we're there. We're on Audioboom if you like to listen on the old URL, but we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, things like that, to listen to A Good Squeeze. But with that, I'm August.
And I'm Margo.
And I'm the Common Gamer.
And this has been A Good Squeeze.